Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African and African-American men and women locally, nationally, and throughout the diaspora. Also, to educate the African and African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for more environmental education through Black Talk Radio mediums such as Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. You also know that I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and that this show is brought to you also every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you're listening to through the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming via X and Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, this show is also brought to you by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which is a 501c3 public policy advocacy group and community engagement group to bring home the bacon for our African-American institutions, such as our churches, our HBCUs, and our businesses, and other interested stakeholders doing business as African-Americans in the African-American communities around the U.S. of A. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a serious, serious show today. We're going to be talking about an issue that I've been beating the drum around called the Justice 40 Initiative. The Justice 40 Initiative was the first executive order that President Biden signed under 13-8-895. And became the Justice 40 Initiative, became under 14009, which was two executive orders, which Biden administration signed into law. Now, both of these initiatives gave birth to billions of dollars through the two biggest bills in history and the largest thing that has happened in investment in infrastructure in this country as it relates to roads, grids, since Harry Truman. It was called the Build Back Better and the Inflation Reduction Act. In the Inflation Reduction Act, we had this $780 billion. $370 billion of those dollars are, in fact, targeted for combat climate change and in infrastructure and various aspects to bring more upgrades to the U.S. grid system, which is totally outdated, that cannot handle the capacity for moving forward with new green energy sources, whether they be wind, solar, hydro. You have to be able to get that electricity to the customer bases. Now, there's been a whole lot of discussion around this Justice 40. We raised this here at the National Association of Blacks of Solar, which I am the sitting president of that organization, almost 2 years ago, in trying to get Jennifer Granholms, who is the Secretary of the Department of Energy under Biden's administration, to be a part of a webinar where we could get our African-American renewable energy companies in this arena to basically ask questions as to where is the Green Economic Development Plan in the implementation of Build Back Better and the Inflation Reduction Act for African-American communities, because there has been carve-outs made for other segments and ethnicities in American society, even though we only are supposed to comprise 12% of the population, which I have a serious problem with that, because I know that the census data is not correct. And how I know is because I hail from South Carolina, and a lot of rural communities of black folks, they don't even have addresses, so they're not being counted in the census. But we know this is how the federal dollars are allotted, based on census data. So it's very, very important. But getting back to this issue around where, who, and why, I'm going to let you listen to for an entire hour a Justice 40 week opening portfolio, which was just held at the Department of Energy, and it's going on this week, where I personally attended a session on yesterday at the Department of Energy, and we're going to be talking about the Justice 40 2023. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get right down to business here as we look at Justice 40 Week 2023, Equity Empowered, October 30th through November 3rd. And this is the opening statement at
presents the most challenging
problem. Ms. Shalonda Baker.
And within the energy system, I would argue that issues.
Ladies and gentlemen, we just had a technical problem here.
Presents the most challenging problem. And within the energy system, I would argue that issues of equity and distributive justice will dictate whether we succeed or whether we fail in this clean energy transition. So in short, justice and equity will determine whether this generation can meet the moment and whether we can successfully fight climate change. So over the course of this week, we're going to get into it. We're going to have some in-depth conversations around what the president's executive orders mean for the Department of Energy, what we've done so far to act on those executive orders,
and
how we plan to build and whether we can successfully fight climate change and in years ahead. Additionally, we're bringing all sorts of folks into the building. You're going to hear how organizations and individuals can fight for a more just and equitable clean energy future within their communities, and how we can partner hand in hand to advance clean energy solutions for the country. And also, I don't want to give it away just yet, but tomorrow, Secretary Granholm will take the stage and share a very important announcement with all of us. So stay tuned. So before we proceed any further, I also just want to take the time to express my sincere gratitude for all the folks who've worked tirelessly behind the scenes to make this event possible. The team has been working since April to pull this together. Yes, since April. So the team includes our organizing committee headed by Ada Azubuko. Give us a wave here. And Yasmin Jacoby, who fell ill of COVID yesterday and is devastated that she cannot be here today, but she sends her regards, and I know she's dialing in online. We have so many volunteers from our office and other offices, our tech team who make sure things are flawless and seamless, every single person who got up early with justice on their heart today and justice on their mind. Your support is truly invaluable. And we couldn't do this work without you. So let's talk a little bit about what our tech team, who makes sure things are flawless
before
and seamless,
that, actually,
and every single person, I got early where we are. I want to acknowledge that our event focused on justice is occurring here at the Department of Energy headquarters in what is now known as Washington, D.C., but this building sits on the ancestral lands of the Anacostan people. And we're neighbors to the ancestral lands of the Piscataway and the Pamunkey peoples. It's really important to understand the longstanding history that brought us to reside here. We have to acknowledge that. And also to seek to understand our place within that complicated history. As Mary Lyons has said, and she's part of the band of Ojibwe people. When we talk about land, land is a part of who we are. It's a mixture of our blood, our past, our current, and our future. We carry our ancestors in us, and they're around us, as you all do as well. So the focus of today, focus of this week, is justice. Always remembering where we stand on whose shoulders we stand as well. The focus of this day, Equity Day, is to provide you with some background on our efforts to support and execute Executive Order 13985, which is the first ever executive order on equity and justice issued by this administration. We're also going to talk about DOE's ongoing and continuing responsibility under the follow-up Executive Order 14091, thing on equity, and that was signed in February of 2023. So today is our Equity Day. You're going to hear from CEOs talking about their efforts to engage communities and community benefits plans. You're going to hear about DOE's novel and groundbreaking framework on community benefits plans. And hopefully, you'll take with you some piece that you can take back to your community, to your office, to your nonprofit, to your company, so that we can continue this work together. And so, I'm excited to kick off today with someone I have come to love and admire during my almost 3 years at the agency, Deputy Secretary Turk. Deputy, will you please join the stage with me? And welcome.
very much, Alana. It's just phenomenal to be with you all, both those in person here, but also those who are virtual, many, many more virtual as well. If we could just start with a big round of applause for Shalanda for her phenomenal leadership.
Thank you, Deputy.
And, let me just echo the thanks for everybody who's been involved in organizing, including our colleague. Unfortunately, you can't even see the fruits in person, and out with COVID and watching virtually as well. And before, and Shalanda, I'm going to take up a little bit of time, so Shalanda can't ask me the most difficult questions, but just a couple things I wanted to share with you all. First of all, just a big, big thanks for all of you. Everyone who is here, everyone who is watching this, I think has justice, and I love the way you put it, Shalanda, has justice both in the heart, but justice in the mind as well, and putting that into action. So just a big, big thanks for your career choices, everything that's led up to you being part of this community, this partnership to really try to make some real progress here. I think for that community who has justice on our in our hearts and in our minds, we should be clear with each other that the degree of difficulty here is really, really large. This is a challenge, right? You think of the historic injustices that have happened in our country when it comes to energy, not only for decades, but literally for centuries. There's an awful lot of history there and an awful lot of rights, a lot of wrongs to be righted going forward. And you have that happening at the same time that we have to solve global climate change, right? So we've got a high degree of difficulty. We should acknowledge that. We should be upfront with ourselves and each other about just what a big challenge we have facing us. The flip side of that, and I think this is the exciting part and why this is such an exciting moment, not only for this week, but those who are involved in this area, is what a phenomenal opportunity we have. The president's leadership on this has just been extraordinary, and I feel incredibly lucky to be part of an administration that's really leaning in, whether it's Justice 40, all the EOs that we talk about and help guide our work. We've got a phenomenal secretary that you'll hear from tomorrow, Secretary Granholm. We've got Shalanda and her colleagues help leading the way. We've got folks throughout the Department of Energy invested in owning this in a way that I've never seen. This is my second time at the Department of Energy. And we actually have tools in the tool belt. We have significant tools in the tool belt that we'll talk about today so that we can get the most of these tools in the tool belt. All the funding from the bipartisan infrastructure legislation, from the Inflation Reduction Act. So my hope is this is a perfect week for us to take stock, to learn from each other, to inspire each other, and very much to hold each other accountable. And I love the focus on accountability, Shalanda, in particular.
Well, Deputy, you've been such a champion and such a supporter of this work since day one. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for always saying, how can we do better? How can we do more? How can we support you in this work? And we have an entire agency that is now lined up to do this justice and equity work. So when I was asked to join the administration, Christopher Davis asked me about, this was about 3 years ago now, right? He said, well, there's this office called the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity. It's a tiny little office in DOE. And he said, is that a place you think you would want to lead this work? And I said, well, let me actually look at the statute that animates the office. And so when I read the statute, I saw that our office, the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity, was formed in 1978 with the explicit mission of serving Black and brown communities, with environmental justice and equity really at the core of the office and the statute that stood it up. I thought, what better place than that office to actually do this work? In your view, sir, what is the significance of having an office like ED in this building?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to have organizing language that really highlights our ideals and what we're shooting for. Right. Even if we're not successful any given day, even if the historic baggage is huge here, it's like why we, I think, one of the reasons our country has been successful is we have a Declaration of Independence. We have high ideals. Even if we've not lived to those ideals from day one or day 30 or day 6,400, we have those ideals. We should always keep striving. And I think that's the importance of the 1978 originating document along those lines. What I see, though, is it's one thing to have something in writing. It's another thing to execute on that and actually implement. And one thing I'm particularly excited about, and I have a lot of pride in this, under Shalonda's leadership, under our secretary's leadership, is it's not just the ED office, as phenomenal as Shalonda and our colleagues are. This is something that is truly being owned by, organized by, and inspired by colleagues throughout the Department of Energy. And I think there's two reasons for that. One is it's the right thing to do. That should be enough, right? Like, it's what we tell our kids about why you should do something. It is the right thing to do. But I think what we're also seeing is colleagues who are so eager to make progress on the clean energy transition, so eager to make progress on climate change, find that there's no way to do that unless we have justice for all throughout this transition. And so it's not only the right thing to do, it's absolutely necessary in order for us to solve our other objectives that we're trying to get done as well.
Also, you know, I like to say that we have historic tools in our toolkit right now. So obviously we have this office that's been around for almost 50 years. We also have historic funding, bipartisan infrastructure law, the Inflation Reduction Act, which bring about $100 billion into this building to then distribute out into communities to change the course of history. But we also have this thing called Justice 40, which, sir, you alluded to in your remarks. Can you talk about this combination of things? So, again, an office that's dedicated to justice and equity, this historic funding, and then this policy called Justice 40. What is the importance of having those three things kind of working together in this historic moment?
Well, I think they're absolutely critical, and level the power of these tools, I don't think it could be overstated, right? You mentioned $100 billion. That's the amount of grant funding that Congress has given us to these pieces of legislation under the president's leadership and some remarkable leaders in Congress, too, which we should really give credit for, really putting in place these amounts of funding. But it's not just $100 billion. As powerful as that is, it ends up being 70 different grant programs, big grant programs, just the diversity of what we're talking about here. We've got a couple hundred of our colleagues, Shalonda, as you know, who are working with Treasury and IRS and the White House on all the tax credits, including some that we're directly administering, including some that Shalonda's office is directly administering, the lowest on $100 billion, and opportunities to really make progress on those funds. The estimates of what we're talking about there, hundreds of billions. And then we've got our own loan program, which is hundreds of billions in and of itself. And what's particularly exciting is take Justice 40, trying to take all of this inspiration and what are the mechanics, what are the tools, how do we manifest that in the real world to make progress. One of the things I'm most excited about is the community benefits program tool, which we are making a requirement. If you want to get federal funding, federal tax funding, you have to do a community benefits plan with real engagement by the community. It's a way to really live and breathe that ideal in ways that are having huge impact, and I think will have even greater impact as we get going with all these grant programs and loan programs, et cetera.
Wow. That is so much, and so much that we're proud of, so much to unpack. Today we will be unpacking the community benefits plan framework for our audience, but also, you know, getting folks excited about the promise of community benefits, the promise of leveraging that $100 billion to transform communities for good. I'm going to end with one question, and it's slightly off script.
Sounds good.
You know. Coach, don't get mad at me. So I know you have a daughter. And you have
daughter,
two daughters. Okay. So, you know, they're going to be entering a world that you and I didn't have to contend with when we were coming up. And everyone in this building is working to make sure they have a better future. And that climate change is something that we're able to manage and mitigate. What is your highest hope for how we can make that world possible for them in this building to ensure that every single community is a part of this transition and that we're leaving no one behind? What would be your marching orders for us?
So for those who are fortunate enough to have kids either by birth or adoption, or those who have nieces and nephews who, it's just remarkable how it changes, at least for me, changes your worldview. So my daughter, my middle daughter, just turned 17 yesterday. she twisted my arm to go to an amusement park at King's Dominion Saturday with her. Which I'm getting a little older, and roller coaster rides that were really cool as a kid are not quite as cool when you're a little bit older, but that's what you do when you're a dad and your daughter wants to do something. And the way I sort of look at it is the world has a lot of problems, right? There's no doubt about it. We talked about all the injustices when it comes to energy in our country. I saw that growing up. I grew up in a steel mill community in which there was an awful lot of pollution and an awful lot of challenge, and the steel mill was closing down. So you saw the economic distress of that kind of, let's just let the market do what the market does and it'll take care of everything, right? Like, that doesn't work, right? We have to be intentional about what we're doing. We have to be strategic. We have to be targeted, but we have to be intentional. That's why I think this administration in particular will go down in the history books of really having an industrial strategy. One, as the president says, that builds out from the middle out and from bottom up. That is not how our country has always governed itself going forward. It's intentional. It's being clear-eyed about the environmental justice issues, the energy justice issues, listening with a sense of humility, actually having a sense of humility. We don't, as smart as Shalanda is, she doesn't know everything. She needs you all. We need all of you to hold us accountable. I love the focus on accountability. So as much as we have challenges in the world, what I try to tell my kids, and I actually genuinely believe this, is it just gives them a reason for their lives. It gives them a purpose for their lives. Pick a challenge, pick a problem, figure out a way that you can make a positive difference in the world. And I feel like we've got a phenomenal opportunity, not just those of us who are fortunate enough to work in this administration, but all of us together as a community, holding each other accountable to make real historic progress. My hope is when I'm older and even balder, although I'm lost my hair quite a bit ago, that we can look back and we can really say we left it all on the field and we made some progress in our generation. And then our kids, our grandkids will pick up the mantle, pick up the baton and move forward. So hopefully that's motivating for others, and hopefully we've got the tools, we've got the inspiration, we've got the leadership. We just need to put it all together and execute in the real world. And that's what we've got the opportunity.
Sir, I am so honored to serve in this administration with you. It's something I'll never forget. It's been an honor. And every day I'm so excited. And I'm a former rugby player, so I'm excited to metaphorically lace up my cleat and take to the pitch, because every single day is game day. The team knows this. We have been running hard since January 20th, 2021, and we have so much further to go, but I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. So thank you so much for your service and your leadership, and thank you for opening up our Justice Week, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Alana.
With that, I am so delighted to welcome my dear friend and colleague, Marisa Lucero, to take the stage to talk about the community business. Marisa.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We are right in here. Woo, right, we got some benefit plans. All right, let's see what they are. They are so excited next time. All right, well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. As Director Baker said, my name is Sonrisa Lucero, and I'm our Special Advisor for Stakeholder Engagement here in the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity. And I've been working closely with our office and our DOE program offices as part of the CBP, or Community Benefit Plan Implementation Team, in the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity. And today we're going to be having a panel where we will discuss what community benefit plans are, community benefit plans, and how they're establishing a helping guide for the department to work in ensuring an equitable energy system where its benefits flow and are felt by disadvantaged communities across the country. So I'm going to have a few friends to come up and join me on stage and help me tell this story. And so when I introduce you and name your bio, then if you wouldn't mind joining me on stage after that. And I'm going to keep the far left seat there. So if you all come in this way and showing that way. That would be great. So don't be shy. Come on close to the podium. So the first person I'm going to introduce is Nina Peluso, who is a senior.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the opening session for Justice 40 Week at the Department of Energy here in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Ronald Guthay, here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We are bringing you a small segment of this opening day, which ran from 10 to 5 p.m. So if anyone wants to listen to this in its entirety, you can log on to where? PositiveChangePC.com. Also, ladies and gentlemen, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC is bringing you this broadcast over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. Once again, we can be heard on iTunes. We are streaming via X, Twitter, and Link. So, with that being said, back to listening to the Justice 40 opening day at the U.S. Department of Energy here in Washington, D.C.
Advisor of the Grid Deployment Office. Nina has served as a senior advisor for policy and program management with the Grid Deployment Office at the Department of Energy. There she worked across different programs focused on driving transmission investment, maintaining and investing in critical generation facilities, and improving transmission and distribution systems resilience. She serves as a policy advisor, coordinates program implementation, and leads energy and environmental justice efforts. Nina is a skilled policy analyst and energy systems modeler, and previously worked at Forum Energy, Synapse Energy, Economics, ICF, and DTE Energy on a wide range of energy topics. Her work has been cited in the New York Times, Forbes, Utility Dive, TV Magazine, and RTO Insider, among others. Let's welcome Nina to the stage. Next, I want to bring up Annabelle Swift. She is an ORED fellow with the Office of State and Community Energy Programs. As part of the schools and nonprofits team, she works on the implementation of first-of-its-kind funding opportunities for schools and nonprofits. Annabelle is passionate about climate solutions and making funding opportunities more accessible. Originally from the best state and the best city in the country, Denver, Colorado, she has worked in climate policy at a nonprofit think tank and as an intern for the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. Annabelle graduated from the University of Virginia, where she studied political philosophy and policy. Next, we have Jay Garrett, an accomplished entrepreneur, innovator, and clean energy leader, and founder and owner of Positive Deviancy, a platinum-level connector organization in the Department of Energy's American Made Challenge program. Over the past 5 years, she has supported over 180 renewable energy startups and organizations, helping them raise $7.5 million in innovation funding as their connector. Most recently, she founded and launched Positive Deviancy's Embria Accelerator Studio and provides peer support services to early-stage renewable energy hard-tech startups with zero exclusion. They receive free support, 0% equity, and no fees to benchmark solar and battery tech startup hardware so that they can be matched with field pilot community champion partners. And this is primarily in rural and underserved locations across the U.S. Let's welcome Jay. And finally, and not the least, Denise Williams, who's the executive director of Feed the Second Line. Denise was a host to our our ED team, Office of Economic Impact and Diversity team, when we were in New Orleans a couple of months ago. And Denise is deeply committed to supporting and uplifting the city's cultural bearers, including the Mardi Gras Indian tribes and Second Lions. One of her primary goals is to raise awareness about the culture bearers and their invaluable community contributions. Through various through the Second Line initiatives and programs, she organizes events, performances, and exhibitions that not only showcase the talents of these individuals, but also educate the public on the cultural significance of their practices. By providing a platform for expression, Denise ensures that their voices are heard and their stories reach a broader audience. Denise also takes on the role as a cultural bearer as a New Orleans baby doll, carrying on this tradition to empower young women in her community. Through her Get Lit, Stay Lit initiative under the Be the Second Line umbrella, she promotes clean energy to their voice, thereby fostering community resilience. All right, let's give Denise a welcome. Welcome, Claude. All right, as our opening was a little underwhelming, it's still because people don't know what community benefit plans are. So I'm going to build a little bit of a foundation here, share a little bit about our community benefit plans, what they actually are, and then talk with our panel here about their implementation and what it really means for communities across our country. All right, so as part of our Department of Energy's implementation of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act, DOE has been requiring that different project applicants to our funding opportunities implement or propose a community benefit plan as part of their application process. So community benefit plans are decided to promote broadly shared prosperity in the clean energy transition, reduce overall project risk, and build public engagement efforts and trust throughout the development of the project. Community benefit plans help to ensure that the DOE funding supports a more sustainable, resilient, and equitable energy future. So, what is going on with these community benefit plans? First of all, we have several executive orders that have really sought to advance workforce development, DEIA, or Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Accessibility, as well as the Justice 40 initiative, which ensures that 40% of the benefits from specific federal investments flow to disadvantaged communities. Together, these executive orders work to advance these four goals that you're seeing on the slide, which are promoting our benefits to be able to flow to disadvantaged communities, making sure that we have equitable access to wealth building within the community in and of itself, that we're having good jobs on career track level and not just a temporary job, but something that leads to a career over time, and then also making sure that both the impacted workers and impacted communities have a voice in their work or in the project that is going to be implemented there. So we're trying to make sure that these funded projects have tangible benefits, economic and environmental benefits to their communities and to the workers involved. We'll build momentum and broaden support for further action, and these community benefit plans are key to that success. All right, so this community benefit plan aligns with four policy priority areas that we're trying to Justice 40, diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility, good jobs and workforce, and community. These four parts of the community benefit plans intersect with each other, and they're meant to be complementary to one another. So as we start, the project is reviewed and the application is reviewed, these community benefit plans must include at least one SMART goal for each of these areas, for each funding period of the community benefit plan in and of themselves. And the plan overall is 20% of the overall technical merit or the technical evaluation of the plan. So this is a pretty key signal to the public sector that the community benefit plan is something that we are taking seriously, and that they need to also take seriously if they anticipate or expect to be awarded funding by the Department of Energy. So then, during During the life of the award, Avatosh was awarded, all of the community benefit plans become a formal part of the funding agreement. And so this is a contractual element of the award, and they are all required to participate in that. And then they will be evaluated on their success of the project at every single go-no-go stage that we have going forward. So as each project achieves each stage through its funding, funding process, and we don't award all of the funding at once. It's released in different phases and tranches. At each of those steps, there is a gate that the project team must go through. And that project is evaluated, and the community benefit plans are part of that process. And if they're not performing on the commitments that they have made on those SMART goals that I just mentioned, then that is going to be part of the decision whether or not the project will continue forward into the next stage. All right, so with that, I'm going to move into the actual application of these community benefit plans. And so the first person I'll start with is with Nina and with her work over in the grid development office. All right, the grid deployment office. On the other side. And I've got to remember this because we have with the mantra here in the community, right? Deploy. Thanks to our environmental secretary. And so with that, really that's a brief overview. I wanted to talk with Nina about kind of GDO. And so we know that the electric grid is the backbone of our country's energy system. And actually, you know what, I'm going to move this with you all. I don't want to talk. This is a little better. Oh, that's more powerful mic. Okay, so hello, everybody. All right, so we know that the electric grid is the backbone of our country's energy system. And CBP helped ensure that the investments and upgrades and improvements to the current system ensure that underserved communities have equal access to the benefits of grid modernization. Can you tell us a little bit about how this has been working in GDO? How are you utilizing
it? Yeah. Well, first let me talk about what GDO is, and a huge, huge thank you for having us here, and thank you to the rest of my panelists. I'm going to try to be brief because I'm really excited about learning about what you're going to talk about. So with the inception of the bipartisan infrastructure law, as many folks in this room know, the Department of Energy essentially organized itself to both include demonstration and deployment beyond its core mission of research and development. So the Grid Deployment Office, or what I'll call GDO, is really core to that deploy mission. So we are a brand new office as of last year. Our office has grown from 3 folks last summer to, I think, 119 as of this week. And GDO is tasked with really doing everything that's not new generation. So we have $26 billion in funding to support investment in critical generation facilities. So those are existing generation resources, hydroelectric facilities and nuclear facilities, the development of interregional transmission lines to get the energy from one part of the country across state lines. These are really big lists of deployment projects, and also to upgrade our existing distribution and transmission systems. So this really goes from the biggest parts of the grid to the smallest, down to microgrid distribution systems, substations. So really, what a lot of folks think of is not the sexy parts of the grid, but which most of our employees think are, in fact, sexy. So that includes hydroelectric incentives, so small hydroelectric dams that need efficiency upgrades or capital upgrades. We support those. But we also have some major programs investing money in grid resilience, microgrid, and we have a whole set of transmission programs. We do a lot of work in Puerto Rico, but I will stop. That is the Grid Deployment Office, broad mandate.
Well, I've never thought of poles and wires as sexy, but
you better get on board.
So how does existing infrastructure relate to communities? Like, where are those main intersections that you're finding? And then how does that make you think about community benefit plans and integrating that into Is your application done?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think before I started the Department of Energy, when I saw these community benefits plans come out, I was so excited about that opportunity to integrate with communities on something like a new solar project or a new wind project. And you can sort of see immediately how that fits into the community. Our big question at GDO is, how do you solicit and enforce community benefits plans for projects that are not building new generation? So that's a small hydropower facility or a major interstate line that's going to cross many, many communities at once. And so a lot of our work at GDO has been really, how do we encourage folks to be creative in their community benefits plans? And that doesn't necessarily mean it's a novel idea. This may be something that a community has been thinking about for a long time and that they've wanted for a long time when they're thinking about the poles and wires that cross the community. But let's get that into a funding application. Let's make sure that that pathway is there. So we work a lot in concert with your office, who have been tremendously helpful, as well as with experts within our office, to think about how do we make applications easier? You know, how do we use the community benefits plan template, which is a new tool that you all released this year? How do we go on to the next step and make application forms rather than big documents that they have to fill out? And also, how do we ensure that all of our internal evaluators, so the folks on our teams that are reading hundreds of applications, are familiar with all of these criteria? So I think all four of those criteria that you listed, workforce, DEIA, Justice 40, these are very different and all require a level of expertise, and making sure that the folks who are reading, evaluating, scoring applications have that expertise has been something that we've been working really hard to achieve.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that you're just kind of in this first year. You just had announced one of your biggest awards just a couple weeks ago, several, and I won't steal the thunder, I'll let you share what that was. But do you have any successes at what you're seeing in community benefit plans already, or is that still something that you're waiting to kind of develop as the program develops?
Yeah, and this is where I have to be brief because I always want to celebrate all of GDO's wins. I think we see success in every single stage, right? When we're writing up how the program is going to be designed, we hear new and good feedback, or we hear critical feedback from external partners, and that's really important. But one of the things we're most excited about is our Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnerships Program. We did just announce that last week. It's a $3.5 billion investment in the electrical grid, the largest ever federal investment in the grid, 58 awards, 44 states, but most importantly, every single one of those awards had a very strong community benefits plan and scored higher on average than applicant pool on their community benefits plan. And so we are seeing this requirement really track through to the awards that we're giving. In addition, every single award can show demonstrable benefits to a disadvantaged community. And that is really, really important to us. And the team prioritized that, and you can see that in the awards that came out. So that's the whole pool. And there are 58 awards, but I'll highlight one. this is a $250 million program or project. It's a partnership between the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and Portland General Electric. And essentially what this program is to upgrade a 60-year-old transmission line from 230 kV to 500 kV, which really unlocks 1.8 gigawatts of new generation. And it takes it from the renewable-rich areas into Portland General Electric's load centers.
All right.
That's great. That's what we want in the Grid Deployment Office. New resilience, better renewable connection. But what we were even more excited about was really this partnership with the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. So this is a project where the tribe is not only participating in, they are also owning new transmission capacity. It creates a program for minority-serving institutions to build relationships with business suppliers that don't already exist. It employs union labor on the large majority of the project, including IBEW Local Union 125. You'll see I have a list because there's a lot going on in this project. That's good. It partners with the Oregon tradeswomen to support their interests in the trades. And there are not only educational opportunities at the pre-apprenticeship program, pre-apprenticeship level with IBEW, there's also an energy mentorship for high school students. And so what we're so excited about here is how comprehensive it is. And it's so clear that they partnered with the tribe. When you read the application, you say, oh, wow, they were involved in making this project happen. And that's what we're excited to see out of GDO. Okay, I'll stop there.
Well, I mean, the one thing I would say is, like, one thing we don't want to stop is having benefits to communities. And so that's really exciting that you're able to, that you do have a list that's long. And especially when you're talking, like, Dr. Evil levels of dollars, you know, like millions and billions of dollars. Like, that's pretty exciting times to have community benefits. So thank you for sharing all of that. And I'm definitely excited to talk with more about what other benefits you'll have.
I just want to shout out the other GDO folks that are in the room, because these are folks that I want other people to touch base with. I know that Lucci Chiocci of our Hydroelectric Incentives Program is in the room, as well as Jonathan Carter, who does all things external affairs engagement. He's tentatively raising his hand.
Yeah, we have some shy, it's a shy stand-up folks, so people can find you and talk to you later.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, Lucci.
All right, thank you.
And our leads for both of us were just talking about Colin Meeks will be in tomorrow, Dave Parsons for Formula Grant. Come to me and I will direct you to the right person.
Thank you so much, Nina. All right, Annabelle, we're moving on over here to our Office of State and Community Energy Programs, which, for those that don't know, is pretty pivotal in advancing equitable energy solutions, in particular at the local level. They have been, through a combination of financial support, technical assistance, has been extending reach to state territories, the District of Columbia, with the commitment of promoting energy security, affordability, efficiency, and equity. So, Annabelle, can you share a little bit about SCEP and its role here at DOE and how it's working to ensure that Bill and IRA resources are reaching states and communities?
All right, yeah, definitely, and thank you so much for having me and for the opportunity to talk about the Office of State and Community Energy Programs, which we call SCEP. I'm going to try to not use too many acronyms. I know we love that here, but SCEP involves many programs that have been at DOE for a while, including the Weatherization Assistance Program, State Energy Program, as well as some really bolstered new and innovative programs and technical assistance opportunities from the BIL and the IRA, Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, and the Inflation Reduction Act. And SCEP is really on the ground across the country to do outreach to not only universities and national labs and the more technical DOE kind of bread and butter, but really reaching for deployment and demonstration to organizations which may not have ever applied to DOE before. I think that's really exciting to see and definitely an opportunity to reach disadvantaged communities where they are and fund what they're already doing and provide bolster for energy efficiency, clean energy, resiliency, all those great community benefits, as well as to show different places in the country the replicability and scalability of these technologies that we know are proven to work. So my team is schools and nonprofits. We do what that says. We hit fund schools and nonprofits, and we're very intentional, as I think is every office in SCEP, about making sure our target audience is in mind throughout the funding process and shaping what technical assistance resources we provide. One example I want to shout out, and I won't steal the thunder from the American Made Challenges, but we do have a prize for schools that pairs funding with a year program of technical assistance for energy management and building capacity in schools across the country, which is something we heard in the RFI request for information process, where we ask schools, you know, what are some of the things you're looking for? And more broadly, we're able to work with states, local governments, cities, state energy offices, as well as those community-based organizations to cross-promote other DOE resources and ensure that folks across the country understand what is coming out of the IRA and BIL that they can benefit from. That's incredible. And so have you been seeing community benefit plans really be a part of that? I mean, you kind of said, like, here's some really great stuff happening. How has this tool of the community benefit plan kind of brought that forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. Definitely the community benefits plans are essential throughout the application. And we use, you know, templates and things from the office to ensure that we understand this is the first time some folks are writing that. But more broadly, for some schools and nonprofits, it's their first time ever applying to DOE funding. And so it's an exciting opportunity to showcase the benefits of solar beyond gigawatts, but to really tap into what that means for a school with a solar panel on its roof. And the thing that I found really informative about community benefits plans is that it comes from the applicant. It comes from the organization. We have broad goals such as just authority and working in disadvantaged communities and providing benefits, but instead of DOE prescriptively saying, here are some benefits we hope you see, it's more open-ended to ask the applicant, what are the benefits you are hoping to get? What are the partners you already have and want to bring to the table? And so across our programs, we've seen hundreds of partners that are coming to pair for workforce development initiatives, for resiliency, for learning opportunities, and community benefits that we're sort of able to now showcase to others across the country that maybe DOE wouldn't have necessarily thought of. And it's been exciting. Our Renew America Schools grant has 24 different projects right now, and they all have different community benefits plans. It's really different in each place what they are looking for, and the broad themes I would say are partners coming to the table and really showing that schools are so embedded in their communities. It's a great place to see that, as well as some innovative examples. For example, in Illinois, there's a rural district that's working with 20 or 24 other districts to bring microgrids, that's leveraging EV buses as well as solar and batteries to showcase resiliency at the end often of the grid line where power outages can really affect the community. So providing that emergency shelter in a school you're familiar with is something we think is a really exciting benefit. But again, the applicant came to us and said, those are the benefits we're looking for. We see small finding it difficult to find contractors. And so one of the things they are doing is working with labor unions for that expertise and bringing the vendors they have into the school for fairs to show the students all the opportunities in clean energy jobs that they may otherwise not be exposed to. Those are just a couple examples coming out. And I did want to shout out, make sure I get to it. Last week, the secretary was at a food bank with some of my colleagues announcing the selectees. And so this food bank example, I think, really shows that the community benefits of energy savings, dollar savings, can translate into food served to a community. And so that, again, is very specific to the applicant and the partnerships coming out of those programs. We're really excited to think about when you invest in a community nonprofit, what are all the benefits you can get out by, you know, ensuring they have more resiliency and more affordable energy.
I'm really curious, this is a little off script, so you can tell me if you know, we need to get back to me on this one, but the scale is, I think, is different between the two programs we've heard about so far, right? So, you know, you're generally doing hundreds of millions of dollars to one particular awardee that's been trying to work with community members to them for something that's maybe a little more indirect, whereas for your programs, Annabelle, these are almost like directly serving community groups, it seems like, where almost the purpose of the funding is to flow.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of another exciting edition of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We are just sharing a very, very brief segment in this hour-long show of an all-day information summit that's being held at the Department of Energy called Equity Week 2023, put on by the Office of Diversity and Equity at the U.S. Department of Energy, under the leadership of Ms. Shalonda Baker, who is the executive assistant to Mrs. Jennifer Granholms, who is the Secretary of Energy under the Biden administration. We hope you've enjoyed this information that they have provided through this hour. We have allowed this to run. This, you know, is being brought to you by who? The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which serves as a blueprint for economic reliance, for economic development, for large and small renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, also to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the African and African-American communities locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. The show is also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you're listening to over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are streamed via X, Twitter, and Link. Also, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and we'll be reissuing and putting up a new and more upgraded website for Blacks in Solar at blacksinsolar.org for the National Association of Blacks in Solar. I'm the sitting serving president at the present time for the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to advocate on behalf of our African-American institutions, businesses, banks, and CBEs, which stand for Minority Certified Businesses, in the renewable energy sector. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you have enjoyed this segment of Solar Now and the Future with this economic impact on Black America. And what we always say, we don't want you to meet us here. We want you to beat us back here as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we always close, please go in peace. And we don't want you to meet us back here. We want you to beat us back here next Wednesday as we close another exciting edition, once again, of Solar Now and the Future. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. Till next week, we say go in peace.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do. Life is a song worth singing.